Before we begin with the actual shir, just if you'll allow me just to think aloud, I think and share what's in all of our minds and hearts, the need to feel and identify with what's happening in Eretz Yisrael. You know, ha'achenu yavo la'milchama and la'miklatim, and our routine will just continue without that being reflected. So we all need to try to remember what's happening in Eretz Yisrael. We need to feel it, we need to be a part of it, and we need to try to find extra time for tefillah, extra time for Torah, that as Chazal say, the Bezchus Milchamto Shel Torah, that Kol Yisrael should prevail. One encounter is numerous times the grouping of Chereshot V'Katan. Chereshot V'Katan as being classified al pidin as Lav B'nei Das. And Katan, clearly, we know what the definition of a Katan is. The Rishonim say it's based on a halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai, that for a boy age 13, for a girl age 12, that isn't anywhere in the Torah Shebichsav, but that's a halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai, the Rishonim say. And seemingly, it would seem to be a formal classification. The Vilna Gaon and the Chaim Brisker at age 12 and a half were classified as ktanim, and as ironic as the phrase seems, lav b'nei das. On the other hand, shota is clearly reflects a certain reality. The Gemara gives us simonim, symptoms, telltale signs of shtus, someone who's londer by sakvaros, someone who sleeps in a cemetery. So clearly the halakha classification is reflecting a certain reality, that he's deranged. Not like we use shota colloquially in Yiddish as a fool, but someone who, Rachmana Litzlan, is deranged. Question is, what is the precise definition of cheresh? So we know, on the one hand, the Mishnah tells us in the beginning of Trumos that the cheresh adibu bel chacham b'chol makom is eno medabe v'eno shameya. It means a deaf mute, Rachmana Litzlan. But even so, the question is, what did Chazal have in mind? And specifically, b'zman hazeh, that such great strides have been made, and it's possible to educate Chershim, it's possible to educate the deaf mutes, so does their status remain the same as Lav B'nei Das, by virtue of the fact that they're Enam Medabim V'Enam Shamim, by virtue of the fact that they're deaf mutes, or no? Maybe Cheresh, like Shota, the halachic classification of being Lav B'nei Das, is rooted in a presumption of a reality of Lav B'nei Das. And given the fact that Bizman Hazeh, they're no longer locked in a sealed world, but educators know how to reach them, so maybe their status has changed. There is a famous incident which is much quoted in this context, how the Ksav Sofer was taken to the son of the Chsam Sofer, the son and Memale Mokom of the Chsam Sofer was taken to Vienna to see a home where they were educating deaf mute children, and was so, I guess in our lingo nowadays we'd say, was so blown away, he was so overwhelmed and so tremendously impressed. But then they asked him, Halacha L'maisa, what do we do with the Jewish children there? So I think he equivocated a little bit, but he certainly thought, L'chumra, that there was a very good chance that they should be considered B'nai Das because of the strides that had been made. So what we're going to try to do this morning is look at a few different positions on this and try to understand what the definition or what one component of the Torah's definition of Das is and as it impacts this Shaila. Shlomo Zalman has a tshuva about this in Minchas Shlomo, Chelek Aleph Siman Lamed Daled. It's the second source which you have in the Maror Makomos in front of you. He begins by referring to, by first of all, just observing that there is no drasha anywhere in Chazal to tell us that a cheresh or a shelter alav b'nei das. This din, which is aleph based for us, which we take for granted, so you can do a search. There is no drushas Chazal to tell us that cheresh and shelter alav b'nei das. We have many drushas of ish l'mayit katan. There are many contexts where the Torah stipulates that this din applies only to an ish. But that equation, that when the katan is excluded, that a shelter and katan are similarly excluded, that's not a drushas Chazal. So he quotes that Rashi and Shavuos in the context, the Gemara there is dealing with the din of Ein Nishboy and Al Tainas Cheresh Shelter V'Katan. If I say that I lent you $100, you owe me $100, and you haven't repaid it, and you're a Modiv and Miktsas, and you say that no, I repaid 50, but you're right, I still owe you the other 50. So you're a Modiv and Miktsas. So that's one of the three cases where the Torah imposes a Shavu D'Oraisa. You'd be chayev to be Nishba to that effect, when you deny owing the balance of 50, so you have to take a shvuah to that effect. That's a shvuah's mother b'miktsas. So the din is that ein nishvoyin al tainas cheresh shelter v'katan. Let's say the person who's making the claim against you is either a cheresh shelter v'katan. He's the one who says that you owe him $100. So if you're moda to his taina, to his claim, you're not nishba. So in that context, Rashi and Shavuos, it's the first source on the list here, so which Shlomo Zalman cites, says the hot ish ksiv v'hacheresh v'hashote kiktanim heim belo das. Dahainu, that the pasuk only explicitly excludes ktanim, but we on our own know to equate cheresh and shote with cotton by virtue of the fact that they share this same fact that they're lav b'nei das. Now the clear implication of that is, again, that not only shota is considered a lav bar das by virtue of a reality of his being a lav bar das, but that's true for cotton and cheresh as well. And that's how we're extrapolating from cotton, right? The Torah comes and extrapolates cotton. The Torah comes and excludes cotton. If that were as simple as Exeris HaKosuv, that if a male child is under age 13, a female under age 12, so the Torah just formally dismisses this child and says that the child has a different classification. So how would we know to extrapolate from there to cheresh or to shota? So apparently the underlying assumption is that there is a certain reality, there is a certain mitzias of lav badas, at least by most ktanim. Again, lav dafka, that we have to retract our opinion of the Vilna Gaon and Reb Chaim when they were age 12. But the Rishonim say that there are many dinei Torah where the Torah itself goes basarov, where the Torah has a certain classification, a certain categorization of people based on what the majority of people are. So the impression you get from here, which is what Reb Shlomo Zalman is operating with, is that the din of cheresh shota v'katan being lav b'nei das, that they're not obligated in mitzvahs, that min haTorah they can't be involved in monetary transactions and the like, is based on a certain reality. So once the Torah tells us, in the case of katan, in the instance of katan, that someone who's a lav bar das, this din doesn't apply to him, so then we know, well, cheresh and shota are the same. So the clear implication here, which Reb Shlomo Zalman sees, again, is that there's a presumption of a reality of a metzias of lav bar das, which underlies the halachic classification of being a lav bar das. Nevertheless, Rav Shlomo Zalman says, if you take a look, maybe we'll look at a little bit and just read a few lines together inside here. He says, Hoil, now if you take a look at the second to last paragraph, which begins here on page 2 of the Marim Makomos, Hoil v'le'inyan cheresh en lozuz mimasha kosu ha-poskim, sha'afilu pikeach godol u'meivin b'tov, v'yodeya b'dvar ha-tfilos, v'nose v'nosein im kol odom, v'yodeya lachtom v'chsim az yodo, da'afilu hochi dino k'cheresh gomor. He says, now, the inference which he drew earlier in the first paragraph from the Rashi, notwithstanding that there's a presumption of a deaf mute being in reality a lav bar das, he says that notwithstanding, the early poskim say that even if empirically the deaf mute, the cheresh, impresses us as someone who's very astute, someone who clearly possesses an acute practical intelligence. We see he knows how to daven. We see he knows how to conduct business. Ukemosha Kosav, the second line in that second to last paragraph, Hatzamach Tzedek, the earlier Tzamach Tzedek, not the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Ukemosha Kosav Hatzamach Tzedek b'simen ayin zayin al chayot cheresh shehikiro. So the Tzamach Tzedek attests, he says that I personally know a deaf mute tailor. And he was tremendously sharp, very keen intelligence. And nevertheless, the poskim say that such a deaf mute should be classified alongside a shota as a deaf mute. Skipping a line and a half to line 4 of that paragraph. Umitzad asvar evadai kosha loma al cheresh shu pikeach gomo v'chorev tuva d'daite klishto v'eino shleima. He says, it would seem very difficult for us to say that he possesses inferior understanding when, again, all signs seem to point to the contrary. V'kosha lonu, it's very difficult for us, lohovin, to understand, minayin yodu Chazal lefotro mimitzvos. How did Chazal know? Where did they take this from that he should be exempt from mitzvos uleposlo mishem ish, and to say that he doesn't qualify as an ish below shum yalfusa mikra'e o mehalocha without a posuk or without halocha mishmi sinai? And here Rav Shlomo Zalman has a remarkable comment, aval kevon shekein hu ha'emes, but since A, we see that there is no posuk for cheresh, and the cheresh is classified as a lav bar das because of a presumption that that's the metzias. It's a presumption that the metzias, again, the reality is that is a lav bar das, and in addition, we see the poskim say that status is not affected by our impressions of the cheresh. So how do we reconcile these two things? Chayovim on uloma, the fourth line from the end of the paragraph, sheyodu chazal berov chachmasam, the cheresh she'eno shomea ve'eno medabe, hu ish kazeh she'i efshal erosu ka'achra'i al ma'asav. Chazal, in their great wisdom, knew and understood something which we are unable to grasp. And that is that a deaf mute can't be viewed as someone who can be held accountable for his actions. V'lochein, and consequently, ein mishashvin b'maisav. And consequently, we can't hold him responsible for his actions, and therefore he can't affect transactions midaraisa, and we can't hold him responsible to be mekayim mitzvahs. Afilu im lefi datenu hu zoriz u'mamulach, even if according to our impressions, by our standards, he seems to be very, possess very keen understanding and intelligence. Okay, so that's what Shlomo Zalman's opinion. Shlomo Zalman has a very unexpected combination, meaning when we presented the question of what the status of educated Chershim Bizman Hazeh should be, an educated deaf mute. So we sort of anticipated, well, maybe some will say that he should still be considered a Lav Badas because it's just a formal classification. And we anticipated that maybe others would say, as the Ksav Sofer Taka was inclined to say, that maybe Bizman Hazeh, the Cheresh, should be classified as being a Badas by virtue of the fact that you can educate him. And Rav Shlomo Zalman says, no, I'm going to have it both ways. On the one hand, I think that the classification of the Cheresh as a Lav Badas corresponds to a reality. Again, the halachic definition, classification, corresponds to a reality. It's that reality of being a Lav Badas which is the basis for the halachic classification, and afal pichein, that hasn't changed. But our impressions of contemporary deaf mutes who have been educated is that they certainly possess understanding and not just abstract intelligence, but developed and practical intelligence as well. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, so bat l'dateinu etzel das chazal. Apparently, there's something that we're unable to pick up on, that Chazal Berov Chochmosom were able to pick up on. So that's one approach. Again, conceptually, that the din, that the status of Cheresh is rooted in a reality of what the Cheresh is. But on the other hand, practically, it still comes to the conclusion that a cheresh bizman hazeh, a deaf mute bizman hazeh, status has not changed from what it was bizman chazal, what it was in earlier generations, that our impressions notwithstanding. That's one approach. Shlomo Zalman's son-in-law, Yivod Lachaim, Rav Zalman Lachaim Goldberg, also has wrote a tshuva where he touches upon this question. Unfortunately, we weren't able to include it in the Maamar Makomos. So you take a look in the series Tchumen. It's in Chelek Zayin. That's where we're drawing from now. He doesn't refer, I assume, because he's coming to disagree with this opinion. So he doesn't refer to his father-in-law's position on the subject, presumably because he's coming to disagree with it. He refers to the position, but without mentioning his father-in-law by name. He quotes the Tshuva Chassam Sofer, where the Chassam Sofer seems to adopt a similar approach. And he has several questions. If you take a look here in the in page 3 of the Maamar Makomos, if you take a look at the third source, Rambam Hilchos Eidus. In Hilchos Eidus, the Rambam writes as follows: Hapsa'im biyoser, people who are, I guess, simple-minded to an extreme. What does that mean? She'ein makirim dvarim shesosrin zazah. So that they can't recognize when things contradict each other. V'lo yavinu inyone hadavar k'dar she'mevinin she'or am ha'aretz. And they simply don't have a grasp on what's happening in the world. We don't really need the next few words. V'chein ha-mevuholem v'hanechpozim b'daitam v'hamishtagim b'yoser harei elu b'chlal ha-shotim. So the Rambam says, if you have someone who's so simple-minded, right, and Rachman Litzlan of such low intelligence that they don't really understand, don't understand what's going on, that person should be included in the class of Shotim. And again, in the context of Hilchos Eidus, one couldn't accept testimony from such a person. If one extrapolates from here to Kol HaTorah Kula, it would have all the implications of being included in that classification. So Rav Zalman Nechemya says, if it were the case that cheresh, again, a deaf mute, is classified as a live bardas, not for technical reasons, but because there's an assumption that due to the disability, again, Rachman al-Islan, of being a deaf mute, there's a reality of being a lav badas. So wouldn't you have thought that this Pesi B'Yosef, the simpleton, again, someone who's so simple-minded to an extreme, that one would equate him with a Cheresh, not with a Shota, because a Shota can be a genius on an IQ test, but he's deranged, Rachman al-Islan. The fact that he's lon bebeis hakvaros doesn't. The fact that he sleeps in the cemetery, or the other korea ksuso, he rips his clothing. The fact that he's deranged isn't a commentary on how much innate intelligence the person possesses. So one would have thought that the more natural grouping for the psa'im beyoser, if it's true, that what underlies the classification of cheresh is the fact that the cheresh, again, there's a presumed reality of being lav bardas due to the twin disabilities. So then one would have thought that would be the natural grouping for the psa'im beyoser. And yet the Rambam classifies, he groups the psa'im beyoser together with shotim. That's one question. Another question, if you go to page 4 here on the on the sources, the top source, the Mishnah in Gittin Chav Gimel, Hakol Ksherin Lahavias Aget Chutz Mecheres Shotim V'Katan V'suma v'ovid kochavim. The husband can appoint as a shaliach, as an agent to deliver the get on his behalf to his wife, anyone with the exception of the following five: cheresh, shota, v'katan, suma v'ovid kochavim. Right, a deaf mute, someone who's deranged, a minor, a blind person, or a gentile. Kibel hakatan v'higdil. Let's say the husband appointed the shaliach when he was a minor, when he was a deaf mute. Suma v'nispateach, shota v'nishtafa, when he was deranged, and then in each of these cases the minor became bar mitzvah. The deaf mute recovered. He was healed. The deranged person became lucid. Ovid kacham v'nezgaya, the Gentile converts, posel. Aval pikeach v'nezcharesh v'chazav v'nezpakeach. What happens if you have the following scenario? The husband gives the get to a shaliach to deliver to his wife. At that time, the shaliach is healthy. He's able to hear, he's able to speak, he's totally healthy. Then, Rachman al-Itzlan, there's some kind of, whether a stroke or whatever it was, Rachman al-Itzlan, nischaresh. And he becomes a deaf mute. But then, Baruch Hashem, chazav nispakeach, then he regains his health. He's restored to his health, and again, he's able to speak and to hear. So then the din is kosher. So then he can deliver the get to the man's wife, because when he was appointed as a shaliach, he was healthy, he was a pikeach, he was able to speak and hear, and when he delivers the get, he's able to speak and hear. Kosher tchilasa v'sof of bedas kosher. So it's quite clear from this Mishnah, there are other sources in the Gemara which bear this out as well, but it's quite clear from this source, what happens, you have a person, he's a pikeach, let's say for argument's sake, he's 50, 60 years old. His whole life, Baruch Hashem, he's been able to hear, he's been able to speak. Okay, and then Rachman al-Itzlan, something happens, and he's rendered a deaf mute. So it's quite clear from the Mishnah that immediately he now has the status of a cheresh. Right? Immediately has the status of a cheresh. What happened to the, all of a sudden he lost his das? I mean, for 50 years he's a nuclear physicist. He's whatever. He's brilliant. He has more friends than anyone. He's on every level. He's totally totally integrated, totally developed, and all of a sudden, Rahman al-Itslan, because of some kind of incident, which results, Rahman al-Itslan, in the loss of the ability to hear and to speak, so all of a sudden he lost his das, and yet it's clear from the mission that that's the case. And, let's dramatize it in the other direction, and let's say that now for 30 years he remains in that state, and then he recovers miraculously. So now all of a sudden, instantaneously, he doesn't have to go take any refresher courses. Instantaneously, he reverts back to his prior status of being a Bar Das. How can it be if there's some kind of presumption, if again, the halachic classification of being a Lav Bar Das is rooted in and corresponds to an underlying reality, an underlying mitzias of Lav Bar Das? What, it's a switch that turns on and off? Rahman al-Tzlan. So when, again, he suffered whatever it was that brought about the change, all of a sudden, in reality, all his Das evaporates? And when he recovers, so then all of a sudden he regains it instantaneously? How can that be, says Rav Zalman Nechemya. He has another kasha, so maybe we'll omit that one for now. Based on all this, so Rav Zalman Nechemya comes to the conclusion. Mikolze nira muchach. I apologize. I'm just going to read you three lines. This you don't have in front of you, but mikolze nira muchach shelo chilka Torah becheresh bein sheyesh lo deyot slula ubein sheein bo deyot slula. From all these proofs, some of which we've reviewed, he says, he thinks the inescapable conclusion is that the Torah doesn't distinguish by a deaf mute between whether or not he's lucid, he has understanding, or not. V'chol shehu cheresh she'eino shomea ve'eino medaber, goz v'torah she'ein daito chashuv adeya. V'lochein ein kidushav kidushin, v'chol ma shetzarach das ha'osa lasos, chalos, in terms of chiyuv and mitzvahs. So Rav Zalman Nechemya says he thinks, no, it's just a formal gzeres hakasuv. It's a formal gzeres hakasuv. But Rav Zalman says we don't find such a drush as Chazal. So Rav Zalman Nechemya, I don't think he addresses this explicitly, but the truth is that there are Tosfos in different places, but Tosfos tells us that sometimes the Gemara seems to be assuming a din which must be based on a drasha, and the Gemara doesn't tell us the drasha. And they say that Shema drasha hu be'eza shehu malkom, and for whatever reason, that drasha's chazal didn't come down to us. It wasn't transmitted to us. So presumably, Rav Zalman Nechemya is making such an assumption in this context as well, that it must be that there is a gzeres hakosov, that chazal did have some drasha that just formally a deaf mute is considered a lav bar das, and it's not intended to reflect or correspond to any metzias. Memeli, he says, then you understand very well. Yeah, his whole life he could have been a bar das. Rahman al-Itslan, there's some accident, and he's rendered a cheresh. So yes, so at this point he becomes a lav bar das. He recovers, so then he regains the das, because the whole thing is just a formal classification. It's not intended to correspond to any reality. That being the case, it's a little bit ironic that even though he and Rav Shlomo Zalman are really worlds apart conceptually, but they come to the same conclusion, right? Rav Zalman Nechemya also would come to the conclusion that Bizman Azeh, the din of a cheresh, remains the same, for a very different reason than Rav Shlomo Zalman. Rav Shlomo Zalman says there is a reality which underlies that classification, but a reality which we don't perceive, which Chazal did perceive that we don't perceive. And Rav Zalman Nechemya says, no, he doesn't think that that's the case. The psak is correct, the conclusion is correct, but for a very different reason, and that is that Chazal never intended that classification to reflect or to correspond to a reality of being lavadas. It's a formal classification. Okay. Now, if you take a look here in the source sheet, in source number 7. So this is the Gemara in Chagiga is commenting on the opening Mishnah in Chagiga, which talks about who's obligated in Re'iyas Ponim Ba'azara, in the midst of Yeyro'eh Kol Zechorcha and Shalosh Regalim, that the Jewish men are obligated in the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel, Re'iyas Ponim Ba'azara, to come into the Azara and the Shalosh Regalim, and on that occasion to bring an Olas Re'iyah. And the Mishnah says that everyone is chayav with the exception of, and one of that list of exceptions is Chutz Mecher Rishot V'Katan. Now let's read these three lines carefully, Rabbi Osai. There's a subtle, but I think very compelling inference to be drawn here. So the Gemara is commenting here, source 7 on page 4. Chutz Mecher Rishot V'Katan. So says the Gemara, Katan Icheresh Dom Yedishot V'Katan. The Mishnah mentions Cheresh in the same breath alongside a Shota and Koton. Ma Shota v'Koton delav b'nei Deya. Just as, what's the halachic rubric of Shota v'Koton? Why is a Shota and why is a Koton exempt from mitzvahs? Delav b'nei Deya. Af cheresh, so to a cheresh de lav ba'deyahu. So we see that cheresh is exempt from mitzvahs for the same reason. He belongs to the same rubric of lav b'nei deyah. Fine. V'komash malan, and from this, the Mishnah now teaches us kiddusnan, that the Mishnah in Chagiga is hinting at what the Mishnah in Truma spells out. Cheresh shedibu bo chachamim b'chol makom. The cheresh about whom the sages spoke without modification. She'eno shomer ve'eno medaber. It means both deaf and mute. Not only deaf or not only mute, but deaf mute, rachmana litzlan. Ha medaber ve'eno shomer. A deaf person who speaks, or shomeh v'enu medaber, or a mute person who's able to hear, chayev. So how did the Gemara draw this inference? The Gemara says, let's again, it's a subtle point, Rabbi Osai. The Gemara says like this: the Mishnah mentions cheresh alongside shota v'katan. Right? Now, in so doing, the Mishnah clarifies for us that the cheresh under discussion is a deaf mute. Why? Because in mentioning Cheresh alongside Shota V'Katan, Shota V'Katan are part of a mitzvah. Why? Because the Lav B'nei Deya. So in mentioning Cheresh in the same breath, the implication is that a Cheresh is part of for the same reason. That must mean, Kamash Malan, that must mean that the Cheresh we're talking about is an Eina Madabi V'Eina Shameya. Why? The only way I think this Gemara makes sense is if you say that the assumption is that the Cheresh is a Lav Vadas because there's a Metzias of Lav Vadas. That's what the Gemara is saying is a Shomea, the Enu Medaber, some who's just mute or someone who's just deaf, there's no way you can convince me that that person in reality is a Lav Vadas. If you're mentioning a Cheresh in the same breath, you're including Cheresh under the same rubric as Shota V'Katan, that can only mean one thing. Again, that can only mean that the Cheresh you're talking about, if you're telling me that the reason he's part of a mitzvah is because in reality he's a Lav Bar Das, that can only be true of a Cheresh who's both deaf and mute, who's Einu Medaber V'Einu Shomea. Because if the cheresh you were talking about is either only deaf or only mute, there's no way that we can classify such a person as being in reality a lav bardas. And if that were the case, how could you mention him alongside the shota v'katan? So, Kim Dumani, this Gemara would seem to be mefurish. I don't know what Reb Zalman Nechemiah, so we have to write him a letter. Maybe he's busy, so I don't know if it's time to read our letters. But and ask him what to do with this Gemara. But I'm not sure what you do with this Gemara. This Gemara, l'chora, I think, is very, very telling that Chazal are assuming that Cheresh. Because if Cheresh were a formal classification, Gzeres HaKasuv, so maybe the Gzeres HaKasuv is that a deaf person who has speech, or a mute person who hears, is technically classified as a lav bardas. How does the fact that it's mentioned alongside Shota V'Katan prove so conclusively that the Cheresh under discussion is Einu Medaber Einu Shomea? Only if it's clear that once you say lav bardas, it means in reality that he's a lav bardas. In reality, he's lav bardas. And that's what the Gemara says. Well, if you're telling me that like a shota, that the cheresh in reality is lav bardas, then that has to mean that the only cheresh you can be talking about is a deaf mute, because clearly someone who's only mute or someone who's only deaf is a bardas in reality. So l'chara, that's a very big kasha on the opinion that it's Gzeres HaKasuv. On the other hand, Reb Zalman Nechemiah has very compelling kashas to say that it's a reality. So how can it be turned on and off? For 50 years, for 60 years, a person was a pikeach, and then all of a sudden, because of some accident, Rahman al-Islam, instantaneously, he loses that das, it evaporates. How can it be? So let's take a look at source number 8. Omer of Kahana. Cheresh sheyochel ledaber mitoch haksav. Kos v'nunosin gad l'ishto. A deaf mute who can communicate in writing can authorize a get for his wife. Meaning, I'm sorry that we don't have the Rashi here, but as Rashi points out, meaning that Rav thinks that a cheresh, again, a deaf mute, who's able to communicate through writing, he is considered a bardas. Right? He is considered a bardas. Because let's say, what happens, Rahman al-Itzlan, if you have a person who was a pikeach, and then he's nischarish. He got married when he was a pikeach, and then he's nischarish. So the din is, leaving aside the possible exception of Rav's maimer, we don't pass on like Rav anyway, but leaving this aside, so the din is, there's no way he can divorce his wife, because since when he got married he was a pikeach, so the kiddushin he has with his wife is a full-fledged kiddushin, it's kiddushin daraisa. Now he's a cheresh is a lav bardas, so there's no way he can authorize and give a get. So in such a case, there's no way that a get can be given. Now, Rav comes in his Mechadesh the following. He says, let's say a cheresh, again, he got married when he's a pikeach, so what we have to undo here is full-fledged kiddushin daraisa. Let's say this pikeach is yochel ledaber mitoch haksav. We see he's able to communicate through writing. So then Rav thinks that by virtue of that, he's dino kebardas, and therefore he's classified as a bardas, and consequently, Kosvin Nosin Gedle Ishka. Amr of Yosef, Michael Mashmalon. What's the Chiddush? Tanina, Nishtatek. The Mishnah in Gitin here has a case. A person becomes mute. V'amrulo, and they say to him, Nichtov Gedle Ishtacha. Should we write a get and give it to your wife? V'hirkin Berosho, and he nods his head. So now, how do we know whether he understood the question? Maybe he didn't understand the question. So how can you place credence? How can you rely on his nodding? So both can also shlosha palmim. So you test him three times. Im ama alav lav al hain hain. You ask him, is it springtime now? And if he nods yes to that also, so then you see that Nebuch, he doesn't understand, and you can't rely on the fact that he's nodding his head affirmatively. But if you ask him three questions, and each time he either he nods his head yes or no appropriately, so then you see that he does understand, and that he's successfully communicating through nodding. So the Mishnah already said that the husband's authorization for the get doesn't have to be oral, as long as he communicates, even if it's not oral. So Amalei Rabbi Zeira, no, what Rav said is a much bigger chiddush. Ilem kamris, you're quoting me the case of someone who's only a mute. Shaina ilem. And ilem is different. The sanya medabe v'ena shomea zehu cheresh. Shomea v'ena medabe zehu ilem. V'zeh v'zeh hareihen kepikcha m'chol divrehem. And ilem, someone who's only a mute, rachman letzlan, he's again, he's classified as a bardas, a fully responsible adult. In his case, all we have to do is ascertain, did he understand the question we posed to him? And did he really authorize a get? Or maybe he didn't understand the question. But we're not looking to establish that he's a bardas. That someone who's only a mute, Rachman al-Itzlan, is a bardas. What Rav was machadesh was a tremendous chiddush. Rav said that not only doesn't the authorization have to be oral, but Rav was machadesh that the fact that he can communicate through writing, based on that, you can classify him as a bardas. That's a much bigger chiddush than the Mishnah ever said. That goes miles and miles beyond what the Mishnah ever said. The Mishnah just said the authorization to give a get doesn't have to be oral. Rav says, by virtue of the fact that he can communicate through writing, based on that, we'll classify him as being a bardas. Now, the Gemara continues, and the Gemara says that Omer Abzeira, the third line from the end of this excerpt, I will say, towards the end of the line, Omer Abzeira, Ikashili Hakashili. I have a different kasha on Rav. Ikashili Hakashili, the Sanya Imlo Yagit, Pradli Ilaim Shenu Yochalahagit, Amai Hayochalahagit Mitochaksav. According to Rav, why shouldn't a mute person be able to testify in Beis Din? We darshan that a mute person can't testify. Why can't he testify? Let him come in and let him write his edus in Beis Din. So Amalei Abaye, edus ka'amris, shayne edus do'achman amir mipiyam v'lo mipiksavim. Now, what was Reb Zeira's kasha? I don't understand. What did Rav say? Again, Reb Zeira say, let's try to home in on this. What did Rav say? Rav was machadesh that a cheresh, a deaf mute, who otherwise would be considered a lav bardas, by virtue of his ability to communicate through writing, will treat him as a bardas, and therefore will be mechayev him in mitzvah, so we'll let him authorize a get for his wife, etc. So if Zeru comes and says, why can't he give edus? It's not going to do with anything. All Rav said was, again, what Rav said is that we will elevate him to the status, we'll promote him to the status of being a bardas by virtue of his ability to communicate through writing. And Rav Zeira says, well, Ebazoi, how come he can't write his testimony? So what kind of kash is that? So Be'emes, Tosfos says along these lines as well, but l'chor, what you see from the Gemara is the following. The following again, the Chiddush Otzla. One component of the definition of Das, again, so we generally translate Das, there's no really one good word, but we translate it, I guess, as intelligence, understanding, some combination thereof. But one element of the Torah's definition of Das is the ability to communicate, the ability to understand and know what's going on in one's surroundings, right? If you think about it, a deaf mute again can be again a very high intelligence, and you can even have this tailor that the Tzemach Tzedek testified about. But let's say Rachman al-Itzlan, all of a sudden The deaf mute, he's walking down the street and he sees everyone running frantically. So in reality, there was an explosion behind him, which everyone else heard, and he didn't hear, so he doesn't know what's going on. So for him, it could be that there's an explosion, there's a sakana. It could be that that there's a free giveaway and that people are running desperately to be first in line to whatever's being given away free, and he's out of touch. He can again, his IQ can be off the charts, and it can be a developed intelligence as well, but he's not in touch. Because of those disabilities, he's not in touch with the world around him. So one component, what we're suggesting is that one component, alongside the conventional ones that come to mind, that one component of the definition of Das, again, is this being attuned to what's going on in one's surroundings, which can be measured by the ability to communicate. Now, how does this make sense of the Gemara as follows? Rav comes and says that I think that someone who can communicate in writing, that is the equal, that's the equivalent of being able to communicate either by speaking or being able to hear speech. I think that's a full-fledged equivalent, meaning that is as high a form of communication as speech. Again, someone who's only deaf but can speak, again, he can participate in that form of communication. A person who's a mute but hears, he also participates in oral communication. Rav comes and he's machadesh that I think, notice Rav's lashon, cheru sheyochol ledaber mitoch haksav, not just sheyodea lichtov, not just that he has developed intelligence that he knows how to write, but he's able to accomplish the same thing that we accomplish through oral communication. He's able to accomplish that through written communication. I think that's enough to elevate him to meet the standard, again, of being able to communicate, being able to be attuned to what's happening in the world around him, that would make him a bar das. That's what Rav says. So comes Reb Zeren and asks a good kash, im lo yagid. So the Torah says that Eidos has to be communicated to Beis Din. So Mela, if you say that writing isn't the equal of speech as a form of communication, so I understand why a mute person can't give Eidos. But if you, Rav, are going to tell me that writing is as high a form of communication, that it's the equal of speech, sufficiently so that you will classify a deaf mute as a bar das by virtue of his ability to communicate through writing, then I don't understand why this wouldn't be an acceptable way of communicating your edus to Beis Din. What does Abaye answer? Abaye answers, "If you're right. If all the Torah would have said is lo yagid, you would have been right. But shayne edus derachmona amar mipihem velo mipiksavam." No, the Torah stipulated not just communication, but the Torah stipulated oral communication. It has to be mipi ha'edim, literally from the mouths of the edim. So what are we suggesting here, Rabbi? We're suggesting the following, that what emerges from this Gemara in Gittin is that one component, a crucial, indispensable component of Das, again, in addition to everything else which comes to mind when we talk about intelligence and understanding, is the ability to be attuned to what's happening around one, the ability to communicate. Now already we can understand, on the one hand, so let's look back at all our, we had sort of contrary indications here. On the one hand, we had all the proofs that Reb Zalman Nechemiah marshals, that it isn't a mitzias. How can it be that someone who for 50, 60 years has been a fully functioning person on a very high level, Rachmana Litzlan, some accident happens, he becomes a deaf mute, he loses his das? Yeah, he taka does lose his das, because right now, instantaneously, that ability to be attuned to what's going on in the world around him, when he sees people running, he can't begin to understand what's going on in the world around him. The fact that for 50, 60 years he was, again, functioning on a very, very high level, and he continues in other contexts too, but that he taka loses instantaneously, and that when he's chozev and nispakeach, when he regains his hearing and speech, so that is restored to him. Now, if he regains even his speech, so then he can call out to someone, what's going on? And the person will see that he doesn't know what's going on. Me'idach gisa. So it is something, again, which can be lost instantaneously, but on the other hand, it taka does correspond to a reality of being a lav bar das, which would be consistent with the inference that we drew from the Gemara in Chagiga. So how would we come out halacha l'maisa? So what would we say halacha l'maisa, again, based on, I say halacha l'maisa theoretically, obviously, the poskim don't need my advice. I mean theoretically. So how would this come out halacha l'maisa in terms of again a cheresh b'zman hazeh, deaf mute that can be educated, who are educated? So l'chora, on the one hand, so whether it's through sign language or other means of communication, so again they certainly are more attuned to what's happening than they were once upon a time. On the other hand, it's hard to imagine that with all the strides that have been made, that it's the equivalent of being able to actually hear or speak. I would imagine that if one were to accept this definition of das that we're suggesting, one would also come to the same conclusion as Rav Shlomo Zalman did, as Yivod Elochayim Rav Zalman Nechemya does, that our Chershim B'Zman Hazeh would still have the same status and be considered a part of a mitzvah. So just one last footnote, if you'll allow me. So many years after thinking about this inyan and working out this approach, so I saw a sefer recently published on the Yud Gimli Korim by someone who was a Talmud for many years in Ne Yisrael. And he has a sefer called Evan Shasiya, and he writes that it's based primarily on the shiurim of Rav Yaakov Weinberg about the Yud Gimli Korim. So he has an introductory essay there entitled Yediyah and Emunah. And one of the things he tries to do is he tries to define das. Again, he's coming at it not from the angle we are, not so much in terms of chiyuv and mitzvahs and the like, but more from the vantage point of das versus emunah. That's his angle. So he's approaching from a very different angle. And he says that he heard the following b'shem b'futna, the following definition of what it means that a person is lacking in das. He says, Futna gave the following illustration. Listen to this one for a second. He says, someone who's a lav bar das, he's talking specifically about the difference between chokhmah, bina, and das. Chokhmah being wisdom, which he describes as just accumulating information, facts, knowledge in that sense. And bina means to draw, to be able to deduce, to be able to make inferences. So what's das? So das is a certain grasp of mitzias. He suggests that. And he says that he heard from his rebbeim that Rav Futna illustrated as follows. He says, you know someone who's a, he doesn't mean halachically in terms of being part of a mitzvah. He says, you know someone who's a lav bar das, someone who comes skipping into a beis avel, dressed in the most festive of clothes, singing Gamzu L'Tova. So he's a lav bar das, he says. That's he quotes from Rav Futna. He says, a chacham, yeah, is he wrong, the Gamz of the Tova? Is he wrong, the Komad of the Rahman al-Tavar? Chas v'shalom, he's not wrong, he's absolutely right. Chachma he has. And Bina, Yitachem, that he has Bina also. Mustami, he can tell you how Chazal came to that conclusion. How Chazal came to that conclusion that everything Kodesh Baruch does is the Tova. But Halav Badas he is. He has no grasp of mitzias to know what you're supposed to say when, and when you're supposed to, and how to apply, and how to, he's not attuned at all to the Metzius. That's exactly the definition that we worked out through these sources. So that's what he says also. And that's why in Sfarim it says that Das represents chibur, connection, right? And that's how it's used in the sense of a ha'adam yodas chave ishto, where it is used to describe intimacy. So again, because it means chibur, it means connection. And that's exactly what we're suggesting, right? That part of the definition of das, again, is that a person should be mechubar, that he should be connected to the world around him. He should be connected to his surroundings. And that's taka why we classify a cheresh as a lav bar das. It does correspond to a reality of lav bar das, but on the other hand, it is something which Rachmana Litzlan can be lost instantaneously, because we're not only just talking about a developed intelligence and understanding, but that connectedness and being attuned to the world around one is taka something which can, Rachmana Litzlan, be lost keharifayin. It can be restored keharifayin, and it's that component of das which is responsible again for the reality of lav bar das, which underlies the classification.
No, I wasn't touching it, but nowadays, let's say through hearing aids or something like that, where a person then could hear, is that person considered still a cheresh?
Thank you, Mr. Roy Tversky. In dialogue with Roy again next week. We'll be back in First 501 with Rabbi Yaakov Neuberger and Rabbi Yitzhak Cohen. Have a great week.
Well, for that matter, let's say what